Not much. Been hiring people like crazy at work. That takes a ton of time.
Oh, yeah.
That takes a ton of time.
That's good you're in a hiring mode, though.
Yeah, well,
a lot of places are in the reverse mode.
Most of this is replacement, to be honest with you. So it's a little...
Turnover?
Yeah, some turnover. What's new with you?
Not a whole lot. Work's been crazy. Just trying to get stuff done around the house. I've had my share of computer problems lately. My HTPC started blue screening on me the other day. I'm not quite sure why that is. I upgraded the RAM. It might have something to do with that.
What'd you put in there?
I actually put 16 gigs in there now.
Oh, wow. How are the banks set up? What's the configuration of the banks?
I got four. They're all filled.
So it's four, and four. It's and four, are they matched pairs?
They're matched, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And this
new
is
egg.
What?
This is a home theater PC, but I use it. It's my main PC, basically.
Oh, okay.
I do video transcoding on it, and I do pretty much everything on it. But it was one of those things where Newegg had a shell shocker deal on it, and I just couldn't pass it up. So,
yeah, I saw a lot of those. It still blows my mind that RAM is so cheap after the nuclear meltdown in Japan. I thought, a lot of electronics were going to
RAM prices and hard drive prices. It seemed like they're going down.
Yeah.
Good for us.
Oh, I know. Yeah, definitely good for us.
I had four in my Core i3 box, and I just bought four more. I just built that box a year ago. The memory was $95 when I bought it a year ago, and I bought four more for $35.
Mm-hmm.
Exact same memory. I mean, all I did is go to Newegg, click on the, the invoice.
Yeah.
It took me to the memory. It was a third of the price.
Yeah, that's crazy.
It was great. It was great. So I jumped it to eight. And now I'm kind of wishing, who was it? Somebody, Fauché, maybe said, yeah, I'll take that right to 16 and just be done with it. Probably should have taken it to 16.
Yeah, like I said, I wasn't really in the market for it, but when I saw the price, and plus I just added, I got Lightroom, and I'm just starting to dabble in, photography and some in RAW files, so they're pretty big. So I figured it would help with that if I open a bunch of them up and give me a little bit more speed.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I don't know about speed, but it'll be able to handle it.
Well,
you won't be cashing out to the hard drive all the time, for sure. Yeah. You have a SSD on that, or is that still a spinning drive for the OS?
That's the one I brought to the meetup. It's got it's got two Crucial 6 gig SSDs in RAID 0, so it's pretty snappy.
It's kind of piggy. It's kind of piggy, isn't it?
Yeah. Yes, Rich.
Yes.
The answer is yes.
Oh.
What was that? I missed that.
Oh, he asked me if we were recording, and I said yes, we are recording.
Oh, are we recording?
We are recording. So just so you know, we record. We basically start, and then we just record the whole thing. There's no start to this podcast. We just record it. And then
that's why it's Rich's random podcast.
That's right. And then Rich
random
mixes it all together and does his magic, and we're done.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It's magic. Rich, are you on the East Coast?
I am, yeah. I'm up in I live in Sanford, Maine. So about 90 miles north of Boston.
I see.
Yeah.
How did you fare with the hurricane?
You know, I was fine. We had a blip of maybe 3 seconds where we lost power.
Oh, that's good.
But my boss didn't have power for 2 days. You know, he lives north, probably about an hour and a half north of me. Hmm. And he didn't have power for a couple of days.
Yeah, I know some people really got hammered with that thing, depending on where they were.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, I'm not a big weather follower. I don't pay attention to a lot of that. I walk outside. Oh, it's raining. Let me grab a coat. So I wasn't aware of how much problems people have been having with flooding. I just, I'm not a big news watcher, or a big weather follower. You know, I catch, I have you know, certain things I watch for news or listen to for news, you know, and that's it. I don't usually watch local. Anyway, I can't believe all the flooding problems that people are having, you know. It's
yeah, it looked like really it caused surprised. A lot of damage. I'm not much of a weather follower either. I get most of my news from the internet. I mean, occasionally I'll watch local if something's going on locally.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Or if there's something special going on that I want to see. But
right. Yeah.
I watch very little TV news anymore, really, to be honest with you.
I watch zero.
Do you watch zero? Yeah, I watch a little bit more than that.
Not even the local. I mean, every once in a while, the local news will be on in the fitness center when I'm down there. And so I'll be forced to watch it. But I just don't.
They usually have a lot of stuff on the local news that you could care less about.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, it's like, oh, you know, person stubbed toe today in park. Really? You know, that's great. You know.
Yeah, I do enjoy, this is going to sound crazy, but I do enjoy reading the newspaper, the local newspaper still. It's one of those things where, you know, we get it on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And something about Saturday morning or Sunday morning, grabbing the paper, a cup of coffee, spending 30 or 35 or 40 minutes with the paper, that's okay. I don't mind, you know, there's some local stuff in there and there's some hokey stuff mm-hmm. in there, and that's okay. But not interested in watching the local news.
Yeah, we stopped getting our local paper probably about 2 years ago. We just canceled the subscription. And I used to be a paper guy. I used to get the Chicago Tribune plus the local paper. I was even getting the weekend New York Times for a while. But, man, I started looking what all that was costing me and the fact that 99.9% of that information is all available on the web for free, you know, at a mouse click. And and I used to get PC Mag and Stereo Review and Home Audio magazines and AV magazines. I get nothing now. I get apps. I used to get a couple record collecting magazines because I collect records. I don't get any of that anymore. I get nothing. My wife gets a couple country home sampler and decorating magazines and stuff that, you know, we get. But man, that stuff went by the wayside really quick.
I still have my Maximum PC subscription. I kind of like to have it in my hands and look at it. But I got to tell you, it takes me about maybe an hour or two to just go through the whole thing, unless there's some really super interesting articles, and then it's done. So I have my...
Well, I was a subscriber. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I have my Audible subscription to the New York Times, so I can download that on the way to work in the morning time and listen. But other than that, my boss tells me what the news is. You know, hey, did you hear about this? No, I didn't catch that. You know by now I never catch any of the news. Go ahead, just tell me. You don't have to ask me if I heard.
I was a PC Mag subscriber for years, and they eventually went the way of digital, and then the balance of my subscription went to that for a while. And I'll tell you what, I hardly ever looked at it. I ended up letting it expire, and I never renewed it. But there's so many places on the web to get, especially niche news, you know, kind of stuff we all are interested in. You know, you can set up an RSS reader or whatever and find it at, you know, in a couple seconds.
Right, because I don't really care if some local kids vandalize the football stadium. You know, it's like, oh, really? Huh. Wow, teenagers are still acting like teenagers. Wow, what a surprise.
Who knew?
who knew? Tell me something interesting, you know? So...
I don't read that much internet news now that I think about it. I mean, I used to, but I've even gotten away, as you guys were talking about it, I was thinking, man, when was the last time I really went through my RSS and read the news? I might catch it as I'm going to my email. I might see, you know, Yahoo kind of lists out what's hot before you get to your email. And I might click an article or two, but
I use Twitter for a lot of news gathering, you know, depending on what accounts I follow, you know, and I don't look through my entire Twitter feed all the time. But, I mean, I have most of my go-to websites are all tabbed up on my Explorer.
Hey, it's John Sadler.
Hey, gentlemen.
Hey, Johnny.
Hey, John.
Howdy.
Hey,
Johnny.
What's going on?
How you doing, man?
Hey, Captain 1000.
Yes, sir.
Congratulations.
I joined the the Rich O'Neill Club. Mm-hmm. In two more ways than one.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, sir.
Congratulations.
What are you guys talking about? Thank you, sir.
Just talking about news articles.
Blisters on the tips of your fingertips from doing all the typing, don't you, John?
Yeah, that's it. I don't know why my fingers show up red. Eh? I don't know.
It's all those posts.
Yeah, no. It took me a while to get to 1,000, I'll tell you. Like, that's like Rich and some of the other guys, you know, they reached 1,000, a while ago. And me being a moderator there, you know, it's like I should have reached 1,000, right, Jim? I should have reached.
You should. And likewise. Maybe.
Yeah, well, that's it. Well, you have an excuse. You have those these responsibilities here that you've been working on and stuff like that. So that's understandable, of course. And, you know, you have a day job, unlike me.
Just a small day job.
Yeah, you know, I'm sure some of us have to work, right?
Somebody asked me the other day, when do you sleep? And I thought, I can't remember the last time I slept. So it's I run on caffeine and I don't sleep as much as I probably should.
Oh, well.
So, yeah, we were talking about news, about whether we subscribe to a newspaper, whether we subscribe to magazines, and we pretty much don't. What about yourself?
Yeah, forget about it. I remember, who was it there? Somebody was talking about, I think, what's that guy, the radio guy, John Tesh. He was saying that the industry, whatever, loses 1,000, not reporters, guys who go to school to do the news there.
Journalists.
1,000 journalists. While I think he said massage parlors gain 1,000 every year.
Oh, wow.
So imagine. So it goes to show, you know, like if you're going to go to school for journalism, especially what sucks is, you know, let's say, you're in your 20s or whatever, and your parents, your mom or your dad is in their 50s or whatever, and, you know, so they grew up watching TV at 6 o'clock, the news and all of this stuff, you know, and if they're journalists themselves, they would like you to be a journalist. But it's like it's a dying trade, you know?
But go ahead, Tim.
No, I just wondered, does that mean if you're planning on going to major in journalism, you should minor in massage therapy then?
So you should put massage therapy somewhere in there. But it's but at least, you know, if you look at the other opportunities where it's like, you know, like before, you know, you wanted to, you know, get some information out there, you had to go to a reputable place and you'll get your stuff printed and it got into newspapers and stuff like that. Now you just set up your own blog and you can be, you know, you like look at Leo Laporte. I mean, okay, he had his background there with the call for help and this and that, but it's, you know, nothing's to stop you from, you know, starting your own web blog and, you know, and the site and like us with the podcast and stuff like that. And you meet all these people and stuff. So it's at least, you know, if you have a skill for writing, which my son does, and he's not going into journalism, but he's going into writing and English and stuff like that. So he's got a gift for writing basically.
The written word.
Yeah, the written word. So, so you know, it's not that anybody that's going in that field is gonna, you know, not. But for journalism, as far as reporting, you know, on the spot like we were used to back in the 90s, I think that's over.
We have this conversation more and more about what's happening to people's writing skills and reading levels and, you know, with text chatting. And you almost wonder if, like, half the people out there that maybe high schoolers, if they can actually write a halfway intelligible paragraph. For example.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, my son was telling me, I think this is going back 2 years ago. He was saying, like, some of the kids in the school, like, it's, how did he say? It's like they don't even want to look. Remember when we were kids, it's like, you know, you spelled something wrong or you didn't put it in the right tense. Maybe you had pro tense, what was it?
Past tense.
Verb, yeah. Past tense, present tense, and adverbs and adjectives and all nouns and everything. And none of these kids know what that stuff is, you know? And they don't even mark them on that stuff. It's about, the kid wrote something and, you know, did he get his point across? Can you understand what the kid was talking about? Does it kind of like make sense? Like that's like the goal, as opposed to before you got more critiqued on the spelling and your paragraph and indentation and all this stuff. So it's like, wow. And like you say, with the texting now, people are, you know, the kids are, you know, spelling everything abbreviated that if you probably ask them how to spell it, you know, the right way, they're going to be lost.
Well, here's the thing too. They can be writing something in Word and they'll get the little squiggly underline. They'll still ignore the fact that they misspelled it. They'll just, you know, print it up and give it to the teacher. Anyway, you know, so it just blows my mind. You know, it seems, oh man, I'm sounding like that old man, get off my lawn guy, but I just can't understand where the lack of, you know, concentration on these on these skills, you know, are, you know, why we have such a lack in the classroom and why it's tolerated. I mean, I understand sometimes you put the rules aside so you can get the creative juices flowing. But then you should come
hopefully
back.
Hopefully, there is creative juices there, not just like blabbery. Because you know, sometimes that's it. If you learn these skills in school and you know how to, you know, present, make a presentation, how to move things forward and keep people interested, you know, there's like an art to all of that. If it ends up that the kid is just like blah blah blah, typing, you know, texting something or whatever, it's not even like a real conversation. You start to think like, is there any sense in this? Like mm-hmm. they're just trying to move forward to get to where they want and not necessarily do it with style. You know, which is, you know, writing could be style, man. You can read a book and cry your eyes out, you know, and say, wow, that was fantastic what that person said or whatever. And I think that's it. Like you said, I think that's.
But you lose a lot if every other word is like and LOL. You know, that's a tough novel to read for more than a page.
Yeah, you know? For sure.
So I don't know. Hey, Mike, what's up?
Hello. Hey, guys.
Oh, your mic is...
Hello.
There you go.
Wow. That's
my first time on.
I like the startle reflex.
Welcome to podcasting, Mike Carr.
Too complicated for me.
Me too. Mike, we were talking about, and this is an interesting topic, kind of the lost art of the written word, you know, with kids today. And really, I don't want to say kids because I'm getting this way, I think, in some ways. With the written word, that we're losing some the importance or the emphasis on correct spelling, correct structure, correct syntax, that there is an emphasis on getting your point across, as opposed to, you know, it's not about style anymore. It's kind of about were you able to get your point across?
Yeah, I've definitely seen that in resumes I get even. You know, you would think that resumes would be, you know, perfect. And I think people are not even you know, critiquing their resume the way they should, and they send it in. So what happens to that is I see a mistake like that, it goes right in the trash. And hopefully those people are able to figure it out. I mean, if they can't get the resume right, I don't want them.
See, now that's interesting. Mike is somebody in a position to hire people, and he looks at a resume that's poorly written, and he says, you know, brings the ruler down, raps him on the knuckles, and kicks him out of class.
Yeah, yeah, but if he has a good pool of people to pick from, then you can do that. You know, if everybody applying for the job is all like in that same basket, then you have to start to lower your standards too of what you're picking, you know? So at least, I don't know, at least now you got a good, you know, you can still pick from.
Well, I'm joking around when I say that about him, but I totally agree with that attitude, because I think what you lose by LOLing and, you know, like and you know, whatever the little phrases are that you use instead of saying something more shaded, is that you do lose shades of understanding. You know, the reason why you would choose one word over another instead of using the word nice or good is because it gives you a little bit different inference, a little bit different connotation, right? So you lose that when you LOL everything. You
but
know,
Rich,
when
I'm
you
not
talk.
Seeing I'm not seeing an abundance of that being done today out there on the internet, right? I mean, as people are writing on at least the stuff I'm reading, I'm not seeing that. And kids talk to each other that way, and my wife talks to me that way sometimes when we're texting, right? And I do KK when I'm, you know, for okay, and. Mike Howard and I will chat back and forth about something. He'll say something funny and I'll go, ha, 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 right?
Yeah, but I think we're not talking about whether you do it or not. I think we're talking about whether you can actually go the other way and actually make, you know, a semi-formal looking, you know, accurately done written piece of work, you know, something that isn't, you know, I mean, it can be colloquial. You don't have to not be colloquial, but I mean, you know, I don't know.
And when you're talking,
well, that's something. Go ahead.
Let's see. Go ahead, Tim.
I was just going to say, when you're, you know, we're discussing somebody turning in a resume to get a job. Yeah. I mean, that's an important, pretty important, you know, document that you're writing there. And you know that probably 95% of these people are creating these resumes within some sort of software that has at least spell check built into it. And like Rich said earlier, you know, they see the red squiggly line and they ignore it. I mean, spell check is my friend. I am the world's worst speller. Thank God for spell check, because half the stuff I write, you know, it would be laughable. But, you know, here you are trying to get a job and put your best foot forward, and you at least proofread it.
Yeah, yeah. Like today, I was putting something in the forums, you know, and there's no spell check in the, you know, in the forum, the post replies.
Yeah, we have to fix that.
So I'm writing the word like wrapped, you know, to wrap something, you know. So I turn over to my son, past tense, you know. So I'm saying wrapped, you know, wrapped. Is it two p's or one p? Because I know WRAP is the single word, but when you ED plural or past tense, I should say, is it two p's or one p? So it's like I'm asking my kid. So, yeah,
and that's why I write a lot of these things in Word, because I forget. You know, I'm not the world's best speller. I do okay, but
yeah, especially if you don't have a lot of practice. But that's
I write it in Word and then just copy and paste it into the forum page.
But that's if you want to get something quick across, you know, some message, then this texting and stuff like that, or, you know, it's great. But it's when you're going to have a conversation and stuff like that, you know, give me some love. You know, me, I tell a story there when I talk sometimes. I like to expand and make it all fancy and pull in some attention and stuff like that. So it makes it interesting for people to listen. If you would talk like you text, people would be like.
So, Mike, you said, Mike Howard, you said that if you have a resume that comes across your desk and it's got an error in it, you throw it away.
Yeah. I don't usually get LOLs in a resume.
No, I get that.
Yeah. But what are you seeing? Yeah.
I'm seeing, you know, misspellings, pretty bad misspellings. I'm seeing the use of the wrong word. And it depends on how bad it is. If it was something like, oh, okay, it's a minor little mistake, I'll let it go. But typically what I'll see is in the, not only the resume, but the cover letter, which if you're smart, you've made a standard cover letter and you just change it, tweaking a few things when you send it out. In the cover letter, I'll see mistakes. You know, they've made mistakes. And that right there tells me, you know, if this is your best work, you're putting this forward to get a job that you don't have yet, and you're making mistakes in this, you know, I don't need you.
Sure.
Are you hiring for writing talent or are you hiring for accounting talent?
I'm hiring for accounting talent, and the thing for accounting is precision. You know, you have to be correct.
Yeah.
You have to, you know, it's one thing that drives people nuts in accounting is you have to balance to the penny. And if that's something that, just get it close. If that's your attitude, then accounting is probably not for you.
Do you see though a correlation between people who have the misspellings, and is there a correlation between writing talent and accounting talent in that way? So someone who communicates poorly in the written word, does that necessarily always make them their lack of attention to detail in the numbers world?
Yeah, you know, obviously I don't have a big enough pool to make a
just wondering what you see there.
Qualified sample, but from what I've seen, it you know, generally means that if you're a shortcutter, if you're going to cut corners on your resume, you're going to cut corners later on. Your attention to detail on your resume is going to be attention to detail in the numbers later on.
Sure.
Yeah, I remember. What was it the other day? I think I was saying you were saying using the wrong words there, Rich.
Don't think you win, Rich.
I won. I like that. Mike said just what I wanted him to say. That's exactly what I think. Sorry, John. That's exactly what I think, too. I think that if you are too – I'm going to use the word lazy. If you're too lazy to have somebody check this that you know is good, because if you know you're weak – I mean, if you don't know your strengths and weaknesses to some degree – if you don't know that you're a poor speller by now, by the time you're going for this job, well, you probably shouldn't get the job anyway, because you probably just, I don't know, you're not aware of a lot of things that you should be. But, you know, if you aren't smart enough to go give this to you, give this to somebody who can really handle and straighten out this document for me and then give it back to me and say, here you go, this looks good and clean. You know, and maybe whether you can actually learn that or not, but if you at least can't put in the effort to have somebody else look it over for you, that, you know, to me, that's just a lackadaisical kind of attitude. So, I mean, I'll be right there with Mike, you know, maybe even more of a stickler for that. You know, I just, you know.
Well, but let me give you a scenario. So Mike, I'm applying for a job for you. And I put together a cover letter that's terrible, but I'm 23. Mm-hmm. So I have my mom proofread it, right? And because I might still be living at home. And so I have my mom proofread it, and she's really good at that. So she proofs it for me, and it really looks good when she is done with it, right? And so your first impression of me is that that I have those skills when I really don't.
Right. But look at this way. The resume is to get you the interview. The interview is to get you the job. And so your mistakes at each one of those stages is what could kill you. I mean, if you were the only dude that could do the job, then do whatever you need to do. But you know, there's competition out there, and if your resume is poor.
I think that's a mistake. I think the resume being the first portal of entry is the worst indicator of who you are, because it says nothing really about you for the most part. You can completely fake the resume.
Oh, it is.
And completely fabricate it.
It is. Right. So, you know, often we get resumes and we bring them in for an interview and okay, it's nothing like what we thought it was going to be. And, you know, you move on from there. But, you know, whenever you're getting 200-300 resumes in, you know, I'm only going to interview 5 to 7 people.
Sure.
And I've got to have something to throw you out.
Yeah. Well, Jim, at least the guy who faked the resume, at least this guy made an effort.
He tried.
Exactly.
That's right. My
he was
world
smart enough to fake it.
Creativity.
Sure. Well, see, and the only reason I asked that, and I've got a vested interest in that, because at Gallup we do it a little bit different. We test the talent first. I mean, they can submit a resume through our system, but it really means that resume itself really means something. The very first thing we do is test their talent. And then we say, for these jobs, we're looking for this kind of talent set in that. And, you know, we've got a lot of science around it, and we ask them a lot of questions, and you can't fake the exam, and it's nothing you can study for. And so we do this talent assessment first, and that weeds it out. Now, Mike, you don't have that tool at your disposal to be able to do that, but I can take 300 people and weed them down to 10 that are really talented for what we're looking for from a position standpoint. Then I can go back and look at that resume and weed it out. But in my case, working with technical folks, the resume is really the last thing. The resume is just the resume is just a piece of information that gives me some history on the person that allows me to have a conversation with them. I really want to dig into their technical talent, because I want to know, some of the best technical folks couldn't write their way of a wet paper bag, and that's okay for me. Right. I'm never going to put them in front of a customer. I'm never going to let them out of their cube. I'm never going to, right. They're not going to talk to people for the most part, but they're going to do really brilliant things with technology, because that's where they're, that's where they're talented.
Do you think maybe they come into
what you're looking for?
Right. It's just a different way. It's just a different way of looking at it. I always hate to have that resume be the very first. And I've seen them too. They've been terrible, especially with some of the international folks that we get. You know, they're really struggling to get those resumes put together. And so I don't let, for me, I'm not saying what you do is wrong, Mike, by the way.
So, you know, we do test them after we interview them. And if we say, okay, we do like this person, then we do the test.
Yeah.
So we're selecting a small number. Now you got 300 on the front end that you're testing. Are you having them come into your office and test?
No, it's a web-based test.
Okay.
So it's very, very efficient. So probably the testing that you do is a little more difficult, and you wouldn't implement it on a large scale because of either the cost or the complexity of it, or the time associated with it. We can do a web survey of someone in about an hour. It's all automated, right? It scales very, very well for us.
Now, how do you know that the same dude taking a test on the other end is the dude you're going to interview?
Yeah, there's always that element.
In our case, you know, and I was not a big believer in our test. I've come around a little bit on it, but it's a 20-minute time test, and you know what? We had a psychologist do all this stuff, and I thought it was all foo-foo, and I still do think it is. But what it's done for me is I've tested enough people now that I know if you score a 60 versus an 80, I know what that's basically going to mean.
Right. Yeah.
And I'm really using it just to weed out the people who are too low.
Right. Yeah, and you eliminate the ones that, I mean, you're doing kind of a talent assessment in that way as well. You
right.
know, you're looking for a certain score. That score is going to guarantee a certain kind of talent. And then you choose the higher score ones because you know their talent is going to guarantee, or not guarantee, but is going to give them a better chance of success. right?
It's not a guarantee.
No, there are no guarantees. And we do this over and over and over and over again, and we test it and retest it and go back and score it and rescore it. You know, we want to get that as close to perfect as we can. And there's still anomalies in there.
Yeah.
You know, that don't necessarily work. But
yeah, but that's it. But you also put the resources in there to get these tools for testing and stuff like that. Whereas, you know, if a person is just like, you know, he's applying for a job at the local whatever it is, their pizza store. I mean, he's got to look at, you know, the basic stuff like that, so like a resume or whatever, or and then, you know, an interview and see how the person's body language is too. That's another thing. Sometimes, you know, you got to look at, see if they're trying to, you know, lie to you or whatever. I had one guy there. I remember when I was working. This guy, he could, you know, talk to you, your shirt off your back or whatever. This guy had like really no skill, but when he applied, went for a job, he dressed nice, came in, good interview. And like sometimes, you know, the guy in HR doesn't really know about the job in accounting, so it's a bit like, you know, get to know you type of. And this guy could just like sweet talk you into whatever. He gets the job, and then after we're looking at each other, how could they have hired this guy, you know? So sometimes people have these talents, like maybe writing a CV or Word or whatever it is there, and like they got the talent, but yet when it comes to the job that he's going to do, it's like the guy's completely lost. So yeah, you have to take a lot of different, you know, eventually weed out the, you know, to get to what it is, the qualifications you need.
It's a difficult process because, you know, like you said, John, some people interview very well but then perform bad afterwards, and some people the opposite way. They don't interview well, but they'll be a good employee. And it's, you know, the interviews typically last about an hour, and you do your best to find those situations, and sometimes you get it, sometimes you don't.
See, I take a lot more time than that when I interview, when I'm hiring for those technical positions. You know, we've got the exam when they come in, that weeds them down. You know, the survey when they come in, that weeds some out. We'll do a 30-minute phone interview, quick phone interview, and then they'll get invited in, and they may spend 3 hours with us, with our technical folks. But by the time they've gone to the third, you know, we're only interviewing 1 in 100 or 1 in 200 at a 3-hour clip. But you really can dive in, and that's where you can tell, are they faking it, or is, you know, because it's hard to fake it in a 3-hour interview,
right?
As opposed to faking it on the phone or a 1-hour, you know.
It also depends upon the position we're hiring for. You know,
right.
For staff accountant, I might spend the hour. For an accounting manager, a little more.
Yeah. Yeah. No. Right on.
Yeah.
So, Rich, I still don't think, you know, I'm still Jones in here. You put the fist up like you had won. I don't think so.
Oh, was there? I missed the debate.
Oh, well,
the sides of the position.
Yeah. Well, the Rich is.
Were the sides. You guys were like cover letter, resume, Mike.
Yeah.
Testing on the web, Jim. Cover letter, resume, not so important.
Yeah,
you guys are fighting back and forth. I think Jim has a good good way of doing it. Their company has a good way of doing it. Mike, you should implement that.
I don't think Jim's company would give me that stuff for free. Give me those tools for free.
No, we would not. But much like I couldn't go to Waffle House and get free lunches anytime I wanted, right?
No, but I could.
One of the perks.
Well, I think it's certainly a good debate, and you know, from a technology standpoint, certainly everything is out there. I do, Rich, I agree with you in this. Everything is out there and available to get that job done right. Anybody who doesn't, who needs to do it right and can't get it done right, well, yeah, there's probably a point there that, you know, we should probably check that.
The other day I saw somebody, I don't know if you guys are following the same people I'm following. I don't know if it was a Windows Home Server guy, but somebody posted a tweet, something about Microsoft, and they put out some kind of marketing poster. And it was like 6 or 7 words, like Windows Home Server, blah, blah, blah. And they messed it up. Like the sentence didn't make sense. And it's like they got these posters, you know, all over the place and stuff like that. It's like you look up at a billboard and you see something like misspelled or the word doesn't make sense. You know, it's like, holy mackerel. You know, how could somebody let that go?
I was wondering when Microsoft got a marketing department. When did that happen?
Well, at least for Windows Home Server anyways.
Yeah, I forget what it is. If I find it there, I'll post it in our forums and stuff like that. But it was weird how, you know, that's sometimes something like that just goes by. I remember we had that once at work, and it's like, you know, you print these books. And as a matter of fact, we were the guys responsible for printing the books, and we saw the mistake, and we just let it go so that we can, you know, print, you know, get paid to print the second batch. John. Look at that mistake. See, they didn't proofread it. Print them. Get that print job them. Up fast.
We'll need a second run. Hey, let me go back to the question everybody came in on, and that is the sources of how you're getting your sources of news at this point. And are you reading more news than you did before? It started with a conversation around newspapers and TV and news on either one of those. And I said, I'm just not even really, for the most part, I'm not getting my news from that. And I thought for a second, I'm not really getting my news from the internet anymore either. I don't know if I'm reading as much off of the web or news in general. Maybe it's just because it's all been bad recently, but I don't know if I'm reading as much news as I was before. I'll throw the question out there. Are you reading more, whether it's internet or print or whatever, are you reading more or reading less these days when it comes to getting your news or whatever?
I'm reading less.
Time?
Yeah. Yeah. I guess most of the news I either get on TV in the morning while I'm getting ready or on my phone at some point during the day.
And are you really reading news on your phone, Mike?
You know, I have the USA Today thing on here, the free app.
Okay.
And I'll look at a few news stories there. But, they have the little tidbit of the news, and I'll find one that I want to read and then read that one. So it's not much.
You would say it's less.
Yeah, definitely less.
You have the water cooler work. Like I worked there, you know, like, hey, did you see such and such? There was a tsunami and whatever. You know, then you guys chat about it at work? No.
Asking me? Yeah. I mean, if there's this big news story, you know, we'll talk at work about it. Yeah.
But do you think it's a bunch of people standing around talking about it and they've read even less than you?
You know, the thing is, I think most of us are not reading it. We're seeing it on TV.
Okay, yeah. And do you think that's enough news to really know what's going – I mean, to really talk about it? Do any of us really have a good grasp of what's going on in Libya right now? Probably one of the most important aspects of in the Middle East and what's happening. Could any one of us kind of lay that out in a tangible news story that would make sense to anybody?
No, I couldn't.
I don't.
No. Nope.
Yeah. And why is that? I guess is the question. We have
because
we have
I'm following tech. Because okay. I'm following right. tech news and listening to the New York Times on the way to work in the morning with my Audible account and listening to audiobooks. So my day's filled up with I'm getting a lot of information either through entertainment or, you know, directly as news sources, but Muammar Gaddafi, yeah, he's on the run. That's about it, you know. I know it's coming down around him, and that's about it, you know.
Well, that's it. So. We tend to be getting the news we want to get. You know, this is why, like, when you go to the internet and you want to know about whatever it is, the Middle East or yo-yos or whatever, you go to the website and you read and you go to yo-yos and you look about you and you expose yourself to that. Whereas back in the day, I think I've said this one time in the past there, is when you sit down at 6 o'clock and watch the news, you know, you are well informed about everything. You're kind of thinking in the back of your head, oh, I'm waiting for sports, I'm waiting for whatever, you know, the weather. But then you got all this other information, which kind of helped you out.
Were you well informed?
Well, you got well informed.
Or was everybody
on the
same
page? It's like they say, who is it, Fox there, that they only tell you the stories they want to tell you, you know?
I got to mute myself.
But at least
now.
You kind of got a bit of a generalization of what's going on in, global or national or whatever news, you know? Whereas now it's like people say, I just want to go like a podcast or this or that. I just want to know about my one subject. I'm going to focus just on that. So you tend to become maybe more of an expert on the one subject.
Right, and some of these places that
going on.
Right,
it's
and some of these places
more well-rounded. I think.
Well, okay, and some of these places that you cite, like some of the major news networks, they report news, but they are definitely tailoring the news that they want to put out.
Oh, every one of them are doing that.
Oh yeah, and
yeah,
more than just that, they
are
actually. Tim.
No, I think. Most of the news gathering organizations are biased one way or another to a certain degree.
Yeah.
And that's how they present their news. I mean, as far as world news, I get my world news usually from looking on the front page of MSN or you know, I think John hit the nail on the head. I mean, my news that I consume is more, it's more focused towards what I'm interested in, which is, you know, tech news, right. Windows Home Server news or media center news or just technology in general. I've found over the last couple of years that most of the stuff I really spend my time reading or actually care about to go seek out is, you know, more of a narrow focus. It's not your general, world news, USA things. It's more focused.
Yeah, that's right. Because before we kind of got the news was sort of like, let's say, pushed to us. It's like, this is what's in the newspaper. These are the headlines. So you flip. Yeah, maybe I'm interested or not. But at least the news was there. Whereas now we have the opportunity. We're going and we're pulling the news in. You know, either the magazines or whatever we want, or let's say the web internet or podcasts and stuff like that. And you focus on just the thing. And you know, it always seems that as a society, we're always kind of like we're in a hurry, right? We're always like moving, you know, trying to get somewhere fast. We're not sitting back and smelling the flowers and stuff like that. You always seem to be under pressure and get your work done, get the kids to school, get this, do that. And you're just moving so quickly that, you know, you say, can I at least get the little piece of pie that I want to find out about, you know, this information and get that into my daily mix?
Yeah, and one of the reasons why I don't watch a lot of the news, like the major networks, is because they are all about my opinion here, they're all about divide and conquer. You are either with us or you're against us, whether it's the left, the middle, the right, you know, all of these different political leanings you may have. They have gone a far distance from the days of the Walter Cronkite, and I'm aging myself. But they're fairly divisive at times. And when I want to get my news, I want to get facts. I don't really want to get somebody's slant, you know, and how it bolsters their position about this and that, you know, and why the other guy is wrong. I really don't care about what the other side thinks, in the sense that I really just want to know what the facts are. So if you can't give that to me in a way that's not offensive to some other group of people outside of the news story itself, then you're not my news source, you know, so let me go somewhere else and get that news.
You know what I do, Rich, is I watch one of the major ones that leans my way, one of the major news stories that leans my way, but I like to go over to the one I think leans the other way every once in a while so I can listen to what I think is more of a another leaning to the story. And I sometimes like to go back and forth. But what John had said earlier is, you know, when I used to drive into work, I listened to radio, and it would be talk radio or whatever it was, and got some news that way. Now driving to work and driving home is always I'm listening to some podcast.
Yeah, I'm the same way. And I used to do what you did. For a while I would listen to the people that talk like I do, and then I did what you did for a while, and then I just got a headache. It's like, why am I doing this? Really, I just want to know the facts. I don't really want to hear what I said before. So I'm just kind of like, I've got a bunch of links set up on my homepage, Google, news sources, MSN news sources. I scan the headlines. If I see something that I'm interested in today, I want to know more about Libya. Hey, it's been 2 weeks. What the heck's going on with Muammar Gaddafi? They caught him yet? You know, I'll hit that link, you know, but.
Of course, I listen to a lot of business and market news, and it's generally not slanted one way or the other. They're more just, you know, job numbers, that kind of stuff. So that's a little bit better. You know, I don't have to listen to a slant.
Yeah, and the other thing, which kind of aggravates the situation, like Jim, you were saying last time, you go in a meeting, an office meeting and stuff like that, and it's not your turn to talk, so you know you're doing your emails, you're doing this, so you're zoned, you know, you're not clued in, you know, you're out of the picture. So again, good one, Mike. So you come into that, that's it. That now you're only focusing on the attention you wanna listen to and stuff. So. That's another.
Well, let me say this, John. I think this is the way I'd sum it up. I think. We're not separating news from entertainment. And I think we're slipping in thinking that what we're getting is news, but what we're really getting is entertainment. And so I'll admit, just for me, I won't speak for anybody else.
I concur.
I have focused. I focused a lot of my attention on home server stuff because I podcast for the home server show. I focus on technology stuff so that I can talk on Rich's random podcast generator. I like it. It's not necessarily news. I mean, Steve Jobs leaving Apple is news, right? But I treat it more like entertainment than I do news. And so I'm slipping into a world, and I would say we are dangerously slipping into a world where, because we can pick and choose the news through a feeder, RSS feeder or whatever, we can pick and choose the news that we get. We have shut off the stuff that's hard, the hard news that's hard to listen to. Mm-hmm. And we've overloaded ourselves with entertaining news around the stuff that's interesting to us. And maybe not that really important. You know, whether Microsoft sells a million copies or 10 copies of Windows Home Server, that's really not that important, yeah. Right, for the most part. In terms of world politics and how that affects me and my livelihood, there are things at the local level and at the national level I should probably be more aware of. But because I lean toward entertainment news, I don't get it.
Yeah, and that kind of that's bad when it comes to things like elections, you know, in your right. In your community and stuff like that. Like, what's the guy's stand on this and that? And it's like, I don't know. Is that that's Arnold Schwarzenegger? I saw him on TV. I'll vote for him. You know, it's like, because the guy was a star or something. It's like, what, you know? So it's like people are misinformed, and then and that'll impact your everyday life and stuff. And yet the people are saying, that's not interesting, and they don't pay attention to it, and then a lot of people don't vote, and stuff happens, and then you're like, what happened?
You know, it'd be interesting, John, is if you went to an election that was not a hotly contested, it wasn't out there in the paper and all that, maybe like a judge election, something like that, where most of the people who are going in and voting have no idea who the two candidates are, and you put a name on there, like, let's say mine, Mike Howard, which is a very common sounding name, versus somebody who has a more complicated name, you wonder if I would get a good percentage of the votes just because my name sounded simple.
Yeah, well, we had an election where there was one of the candidates actually passed away, and he got voted. He got voted in.
And it's funny this comes up because I had started up a webpage. I didn't get anywhere with it. That was called writeinmike.com. And it was, whenever there's only one contestant, just write in Mike. No last name, just Mike. And let's see how many votes Mike can get.
Yeah, well, crazy stuff. But that's it. Again, like, that's it. People think about celebrities, or it's like this name, or I don't know. Let's say you're biased, and the guy has a Israeli sounding name or Lebanese sounding name. It's like, no, I'm not going to vote for him. He could have been the most educated guy, whereas the other guy, he just came out of, Joe White or whatever, or also like Tim Black, a popular name. That's a good, Tim Black. And the guy could have been just got out of jail and stuff like that. And it's like, oh, Tim Black, like you say, that's good. I'll sign his name.
Tim Black gave away a secret, John Zadler. Or is it John Zadler?
Maybe Tim is in the government. Are you in the government, Tim?
No, I am not.
Can I say something to Rich? Rich, I like having your two doors shut back there. It kind of gives, you got the two doors to choose from. I like that effect.
Thank you, Mike. I'm going to think about that.
Maybe it's the blue.
You can choose door number one. Door number
two. I'm going to really think about that.
Yeah. If there's a fire, I hope you choose the right door.
I'm running to the closet on one, and maybe into the fire on the other. I got a window over there, so I'm going to be okay.
Well, so Rich is trying something new today with the SM58 that he's got sitting there on the desk. All of us are using some kind of microphone attached to a headset. Or Tim, in your case, what's your setup there? Where's your mic?
I got right here. I got a Yeti.
Okay. Oh, wow. Nice.
You got it out of the camera view. Do you leave it out of the camera view on purpose? Is there any reason you don't bring that up close to you so we get the best possible sound?
I brought out a little nightstand here, just to make things a little easier today, and I just didn't. It's like, wow, look, I have a mic. So I thought to be a little more inconspicuous, I would just set it off to my left here.
Oh, no, let me ask you a question. Couldn't you buy, could you buy a boom and then just have it hanging down over your head but yet out of sight, so that way it would give a little bit closer and
I could
lose some of the
right room. Now I'm in my family room, and I can just imagine my wife's face when I tell her I'm getting a boom and a shock mount for my mic.
Yeah, that's a good answer. Forget that,
yeah.
Then.
Yeah, well, but I don't pick up that distance. You know, sometimes when you're on a microphone, let's say on a webcam or
do
something.
Do I sound good?
You sound good. I can't tell that difference, you know, that air, you know, that you're usually between.
I know if I get closer to it, I sound deeper.
Oh, yeah. No,
that sounds much better.
That sounds totally pro. That's why
I could hold
saying.
My hand over my ear and just do the rest of the show like this if you like.
Could. Well, you could just pick it up and hold it.
Orson Welles. What's in that Orson Welles, you know? Ladies and gentlemen, the spaceships are coming. So,
Tim, when you move it back in front of you, could you just angle it so it doesn't take up as much space in front of you? Or what?
I could angle it. Blue recommends that it's in the upright position.
Oh, okay.
It's got like four different modes on it where it's a nice mic. I mean, you can do like a conference. If you had like four people sitting around a table, it'll pick up everybody around the table. It has different modes, which it directs, you know, what
pattern.
It picks up.
Yeah, the pickup pattern.
Is that what you're wanting to get, Jim?
Well, you know, now that Rich has got, I've thought about using just an SM58, a Shure SM58. That's the workhorse of the entertainment world. Every musician on the planet has played with has sung into or spoken into an SM58. They're $90, $90 to $100. You can find them on sale for $88 just about anywhere. And I've thought about instead of doing the traditional radio boom mic, which seems to be what everybody's moving to, and Rich and I talked about this, and he had the equipment, so he set it up, is just going to an SM58. You got to run that through a direct box or some kind of, right, because it's XLR, and you have to convert it over to Rich. You come that goes right. In XLR, and then it comes out.
USB.
Really?
Yeah, USB.
Oh, okay.
Did you buy that thing you showed me, Rich?
Yeah, this Fast Track.
Yeah.
Fast Track by M Audio. And this one also has phantom voltage on here. So
that takes in the XLR connection and it outputs through USB into your PC?
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm plugging a regular, you know, stage mic, SM58.
Yeah, this XLR. Blue I have is USB, but they do make a model that's another level above this that's XLR.
Well, that's a good sounding mic. When you got right up on it like that,
yeah.
If your wife wouldn't kill you, and you could get it, like, you know, within 8 inches of your face or, like I said, drop it down so it's much closer because you get a lot of air, you know.
Yeah.
So when you if you put that microphone much closer, you get a much better pickup. But you know, your voice sounds much fuller. Mm-hmm. So Jim, I was going to say to you, if you like the way that sounds, and actually a lot of people do, you might go that way because I bought this box instead of buying like an audio interface, which is what the M Audio is here. That thing costs $1.39, $1.29, $1.39. Plus, you got to have a SM58, which is about $100. So now you're talking $239. For $239, you could get. Yeah.
Let me throw that out to the group. So, guys, Mike and Tim and John, first time you've heard Rich on this. How does he sound from a quality standpoint? Mike, let's start with you. You've been listening to him. What do you think of the sound quality?
It doesn't seem that much different than the headset. Okay. I thought he had a decent headset before.
That's a good perception. Rich, you've heard yourself back on it, and I know you didn't like what you sounded like in the headset. Now that you're on the microphone, do you notice a difference as you've recorded the audio and listened to it?
I haven't. You know what? I just got this thing in the mail about 3 hours ago.
Oh, okay. So you have to.
Yeah. Right. So I just set it up, and that's when I contacted you saying we got to sound check this.
Yeah. John, so. What do you think?
Yeah, well, it does sound like a deeper voice, you know, and that's the thing is, you know, sometimes do you want that effect? You know, do you want to sound like a deep voice, like an announcer or whatever? Or do you want to
give off
a different, ambiance or whatever? But then I'm sure, like, with this, you know, because it's digital, right? It's electronic. So you can probably play around with some kind of mixer and change the sound, you know, really high, sound like a little 15-year-old girl if you wanted.
Yeah.
Why do you got to go there, John?
Why do you got to go there?
It's a family show, John. Family show. Tim, okay, so Tim, what do you think as you're hearing Rich?
I think he sounds good. Then again, I don't really have anything to compare it to right at this moment, but I mean, I thought he sounded pretty good. And John brings up a good point. You know, I'm sure there's some tweaking you can do on that M Audio box, you know, to even dial it in a little bit better. But I thought he sounds good. I think he sounds good.
Oh, good. Well, I'll be interested. I'll let you guys know what I think about it, because I haven't heard it yet. But when Jim puts the audio up for this podcast.
It will be interesting. Guys, keep chatting. Rich, you got my son just popped in from college, and I wasn't expecting him. So I'm going to drop out for 5 minutes. I'll be right back.
Okay. Do what you got to do. So anyway, yep, I just got this afternoon, and I just looked it up, and I thought, well, you know, I went down to the local music shop, and I said, I'm going from a ClearChat Pro Logitech headset to an SM58. At least that's what I'm going to start with. I says, what's the next jump from there? I says, I expect a pretty nice improvement of the sound going from the headset to the SM58. And he basically says, well, if you want to have that sort of same improvement from the 58, you're going to have to jump up quite a bit. And he was telling me something like a $300 microphone, you know, something like a Heil PR40, which is what Leo Laporte uses.
Yeah.
Now, that was his opinion, but, you know.
I want to sell you that, Mike.
Well, yeah, no, he didn't sell me anything. You know, I just, because I went in there and I told him, I says, you know, I'm not here to buy anything. I'm just here to kind of check out a couple of things and would you talk to me? So, you know.
Well, at least you're not getting any like popping or kind of like bad noise and something like that, because then that would kind of suck, you know, that you make an investment in the microphone and you know, things are worse. But that's it. I don't hear no, when you're doing your P's, it sounds.
Yeah, you might actually hear the difference in the mic when you actually mix down and play back the podcast. You might hear it then. I mean, I think you sound pretty good. You can you can spend a ton of money on microphone. And
I know you
guys are doing. I just don't see where that's
that's
payoff
right
there.
Yeah, that's right.
This one, when I got this one when they released the new model, so the price dropped on it. And, you know, the longer, it's like any of this other technology, you know, the longer you wait, the cheaper it gets.
Now, what'd you pay for that one?
I actually got $79.
And that's the Blue Yeti?
Yeah. It's the USB one. It's not the XLR one.
Do they make an XLR?
Yes, they make, can't think of the model, but it's the step up from this. The body's black instead of silver, and it's an XLR model.
Well, that thing sounds pretty good.
Yeah, they do. They do. I haven't seen it that cheap since I got it, though, unfortunately. It's hovering around $99.89.
Yeah, I'm looking at it now on Amazon. It's $89.99.
Yeah. The silver one?
The silver one, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good price. Hmm. And like I said, it's got the it's got like
four settings.
Four different modes in it where you can you can do a group,
yeah, that's
or
it.
Just
might
have
want
it focused
just
towards
sound
you,
yeah,
or
exactly,
if you have somebody sitting across from you, you can do an interview that way. I haven't used it that way, obviously, but
that's pretty interesting. I like it. That they actually have the mic pattern, the pickup pattern, so that you can do, you know, straight forward and then straight back, and then everything to either side is kind of canceled out or just a huge drop off in pickup.
Yeah, I mean, if you were in a position where you were doing a lot of interviews with somebody, I mean, you wouldn't have to mic them. You could just use the one mic and go back and forth with them, or even in a group situation around the table.
Yeah. Well, I was going to suggest Jim would pick that up.
Go ahead, I was going to say, like, I wonder if like some mics, like, let's say, you know, the mic is trying to pick up your voice. Now, there's another mic facing the other way, and you're saying, I don't want the mic facing the other way to pick up anything. But in fact, what it's doing is it's picking up sounds that's saying, okay, these sounds, I have to cancel them out from the recording. And if I pick up those sounds on this side of the microphone, then I know that that's, like, let's say that disturbance, like, you know, background noise. Like, you know, you hear a car beeping in the background. So it's like, oh, I hear that car, you know, that tone from that car. So
yeah,
if
noise
I hear it on this side, then, yeah, and then isolate that to cancel that stuff and thing like that. So, that's it. If you're having different mics from...
I think that's an ongoing problem when you have multiple mic setups. I mean, I'm not a sound engineer or anything, but I know, you know, you're always worried about one mic picking up feedback from another one, and ambient noise coming into the other one. That's where if you just have one, it's, you know, sort of solves that problem.
Mm-hmm.
And Blue makes some very, very, very expensive microphones that they use in recording studios. So they've been around doing this for a while.
So what else is going on, guys? Been reading anything good? Been watching any good gadgets that you
how about a tip?
Pick up?
You want a tip?
Yeah, let's have a tip.
Everybody can learn from my ignorance. I was I had just built my Windows Home Server 2011 about a month ago, and I had run into a problem with I use My Movies on Windows Home Server with my Media Center, and I have the server portion of it on my server, and I was having trouble with it where my HTPC wouldn't connect to the database of movies that was on my recently built home server. So, make a long story short, I tried to troubleshoot, and I just could not get my client to see that database. So, I thought, all my data's on. I have a RAID array on there, and I have another drive where all my data sets. So, I thought I'm just going to reinstall Windows Home Server, and I did. It took me about 15 minutes, and that went great. That was fine. Came all back up. But then when I tried to use that move folder functionality in 2011, I tried to move the music folder back to the RAID array that I had my music on, and it wouldn't move because it said there was a file folder that that name, so it wouldn't move it. So I thought, okay, I'll just rename my existing music folder and then move it and transfer the files once it moves to the RAID, which I did that. And that okay, I thought. And so after I got the, I renamed my music folder on my RAID array, used Windows Home Server to move the music folder to that RAID array, and then I transfer the music in back into that. So I went to delete what I thought was the empty music folder, the original one. Well, somehow I wasn't paying too much attention to what I was doing. And you know where I'm going with this.
Yeah, deleted your content.
To a very bad place.
I click delete. Yes, I click delete, and all of a sudden I'm looking at it, and it says it's deleting like 395 gigabytes of data. And I'm like, no, stop. Please stop. And it did not stop. And it ended up deleting about 400 gigs of music that I had on my, So... after I regained consciousness, after my wife threw a couple buckets of water on me on the floor, I'm like, oh, my God, I'm going to have to re-rip all this. I mean, and it took me years to accumulate all this stuff, right? So I knew from listening to other podcasts and just from reading material that, you know, when something's deleted, it's really not deleted. It's just the links to those files are eliminated and the data is still on the drive. So I calmed myself down and I did the old Google search trying to find some sort of software where I could recover these files, something that hopefully I didn't have to pay for. I found one and I downloaded it and installed it and I ran it on the drive that the files were deleted on and it showed up. So I'm really happy. I'm like, oh, all my files are still here. You know, they're all showing up. Of course, when you get to the part where you have to recover them, they want you to register and pay them $50. So, you know, I axed that and I went back out there and I found one called Recuva.
I was going to say that one.
Yes. Recuva. Well, I never heard of it before, but it was free. I think just if you just search Recuva on Google, you'll find it. I can't think of the parent company of it. It's not.
I think it's Pinafore. I think they do
Pinafore. Exactly, John. That's it.
They do CC Cleaner and a few of those. Yeah.
Perifoam. Yeah. I think it's what it is. Yeah.
So anyhow, I ran that. It found all the files, and I got them back in about an hour and a half. I had them back.
Sweet.
So I was a happy camper, but for a while there, I was not.
Now you know you got to have two backups. You have to have
Oh, well, that's just it. Places. And the trouble, the trouble, John, was that most of my spare drives that I had movies on that I was transferring off my old server to my new one that I hadn't moved yet. So I didn't really have any spare drives laying around. It was just bad timing on my part. And normally I'm like extremely anal retentive before I delete a folder, but it was just one of those things, and thank God I got everything back because it wasn't looking good there for a while. But yeah, highly recommend it if that ever happens to anybody. Number one, don't stop what you're doing.
Stop writing. Don't shut, anything
stop what you're doing. And don't restart the computer, and then go find Recuva, because it found It found and retrieved all of that, which I said was about 400 gigs. In about an hour and a half, I had it all back.
Wow. That's a happy story.
Yeah, it was a happy ending.
Yeah, I've seen people do that with the their flash memory cards, on their camera. They took pictures and then they, they deleted it.
Will it work on flash cards too?
I'm not sure about Rukuva, but
I've used something called now I can't remember the name of it all of a sudden, but I've used the program to recover stuff from there, Photo Rescue or something like that, from those cards, and it's pretty successful. I mean, it'll find stuff that is from a year ago, even though you formatted the card 100 times since then.
Wow.
Photo Rec. Is that it?
That sounds like it, yeah.
Yeah.
That's handy.
Yeah, I remember one time I was rebuilding my PC, and then I said, I'm rebuilding my PC. I have a copy, a backup on the home server, so I'm good in case I mess things up. But then at the same time, I was also doing something on my server. I was switching. I was redoing the OS on the server. Then I'm thinking, wait a minute, I'm playing with fire because both machines are sort of down, I can't, don't do either work on one or the other. Don't work at both of them at the same time because then, then that's it. If it crashes, especially, you're rebuilding Windows Home Server version 1, if you reinstall on another drive, you can get all your shares and all that stuff, but all your PC backup, that folder gets deleted. You would have to use that BDBB backup to copy that folder or whatever. But under normal circumstances if you're reinstalling or doing it, reinstalling the OS and saying, okay, I have a backup of my shares over there, so I'll just reinstall the OS. Even if I want to get rid of my shares, fine, because I have my other backup over there. But that backup doesn't include those PC backups. So if you messed up something on your PC at the same time, well, you're out of luck. So, yeah, good that turned out well for you.
Yeah, I now have two other backups of my music folder, needless to say.
Yeah, that's a good story. So what's going on with you, Mike?
Just the typical stuff. I actually need to rebuild, not rebuild, but I've talked about Unraid before, and I talked about how I built it wrong. I put the controller card as a regular PCI card, and for whatever reason, I have the parity drive and some of the other drives, maybe even the cache drive, all on that stupid controller card. Well, I got a new PCI Express controller card with a couple of the SAS breakout cables.
Now, what model is that?
What's that?
What model is that PCI card, Express card?
Super Micro. It's a Super Micro card.
Okay.
But I don't know what it is. It has two SAS connectors at the back on it.
Right,
And then you just connect this in there, and there's the SAS cable. And there's the breakouts. It's funny, is I was going to buy the breakout cables locally, but Fry's here was wanting something like $50, $60 for them. Wow. And Newegg had them for $19. Mm-hmm. And the ones that Newegg had were better looking, because I don't think the ones Fry's had even had the four SATA breakouts on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I remember Mike Fauchetti was saying he bought some cables. Somebody in the forums had said some cables were, like you said, special $20 or whatever, so he went and buy extras.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so I need to install that. That's what tomorrow is going to be. It's supposed to rain here tomorrow, so hopefully that will be a quick thing. Unraid has been very forgiving on hardware changes, so I'm hoping that I will be able to stick this thing in there, plug everything in, and bam, it'll work.
You'll have to let us know.
Yeah.
You'll have to let us know.
Yeah, and this is just given SATA ports. It's not really doing RAID on the card. But, I've done before where I was changing hardware. So new CPU, new motherboard, new RAM. And I took the Unraid runs off of a USB stick. I took the USB stick out of the old system, brought all my old drives over to the new system. And before I put the Unraid stick into the new system, I put it in my computer and upgraded the software from version 4.5 to 4.7.
I was going to ask how you're going to do this.
All you do is copy the file over. So it's like one file, you replace the one file, you're at the next version. So I did an OS upgrade in between, and then I stuck it into the new system, it booted right up. the one thing it does is now all the drives are sitting there and outside of the array. So I already knew I have a spreadsheet. You know, you can have whatever that.
I'm going to count that. I have a spreadsheet.
That well, this yeah. drive is drive number 5. This drive is drive number 6. You know, I knew all that. So mm-hmm. I just went in and assigned, you know, which one to which drive was number 6, mm-hmm. which mm-hmm. one was parity, did all that, and bam, it worked just fine. If you didn't know all that, that would be a problem. You need to know what drive is what drive.
Good. All right, so you're going to do this tomorrow, huh?
I hope so. Yes.
Mm-hmm. All right. Good.
And you know what I'm really what's going to be sad is if I do this, and it goes let's say it goes smoothly, but I don't notice any speed improvement. So that the speed I was getting was just what I'm getting, and there's no difference.
Oh no, you're going to see a speed improvement, Mike. I'm sure of it.
Yeah, I'm yeah, I think I will.
I think you will. Hey, has anybody seen what's going on with the HP touchpad or the WebOS? I'm asking because I have not. The last I heard about a week ago is that they pulled it back out of the fire and they're going to resurrect this thing or just continue with it. What is the current status of that?
I think that's a rumor.
Yeah, I hadn't heard that. Yeah. I think I heard that they may have had some parts and they were going to do something, but I don't think they're actually going to republish it. Matter of fact, what happened to this big supply chain of 500,000 that they had at one time?
Yeah, I heard that they were supposed to be sending them back like to the stores, and then those stores would unload them at $99, and then that's it. Merci, bonjour.
So there may be one last flood out in the stores.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah, I could have sworn.
I know Mike Fauchet had posted on Google Plus that he had originally tried to get one from, I think, either Staples or Office Depot.
Office Depot.
And they had canceled. Yeah, they had canceled his order. And then today I saw he got some sort of correspondence from them saying that they might actually fulfill that they were expecting a small shipment. I don't know how big the quantity was, but they actually might fulfill his order.
Yeah. Well, I mean, those, you know, physically those machines are built and they're somewhere, you know, they're on a train or a cargo or whatever it is. They're somewhere. So it's like, you know, get them to the people. Don't just, you know, bring them back home and, you know, run a bulldozer over them, you know, unload them for $100 and there you go. Just, you know, and at least the people know that, look, this is discontinued device. There's no support and stuff like that. But it's weird because somebody else said something there that there was that over the air update, right, coming for that WebOS. And HP said that they're going to support it in the future. And this, it's like, what? I thought you just told us you canceled it. So what's this future support and stuff like that? Right. But, you know, sometimes it's, you know, marketing, right? One guy doesn't even know the other guy's shut down, you know? it's the chain letter. It's like your CV, you know, it's your cover letter there. It's like, oh, yeah, we're all going to support it forever. This, all those promises there that don't add up to nothing.
I can't remember where I heard it from. It was yesterday or the day before on one of Leo Laporte shows, but I had heard that there's a possibility that they actually might do another run of these things and sell them out at $99. And I just thought, that's odd. Why would you do that? You know. But then somebody brought up the point that they might have the components laying around.
Mm. Yeah, I think I heard that too. That's what I'd heard too.
Yeah. So, I mean, maybe there's still hope of getting one if you really want one.
Yeah. Well, I think, like you said there, I think Leo Laporte was hypothesizing there. He said that, who is it there? Amazon? Is it Amazon? Like, they should buy the WebOS software. Like, some guys were saying maybe Samsung should buy it. But Leo was saying if Amazon bought, like, they already have sort of like a good infrastructure and all that. Because I think they use Android software on some tablet, some
right.
device.
The Amazon tablet's coming out, I think, is going to be Android.
Okay. So I'd say he said if they would use that WebOS, then you know that might be a good way to, you know, for them to pick up that software and then, you know, that's it. So if you bought a WebOS, the HP WebOS, and then maybe if there was upgrades, those upgrades would probably, you know what I mean? Like if Amazon bought it and continue with the software, I'm sure that software and those all those apps that are in their store will still work on your HP WebOS device.
At least I think it's Android. I'm looking at an article now, and I don't see them mentioning that what the operating system will be on the new Amazon tablet.
I think I heard something around the lines, like you say.
I'm pretty clueless about this HP touchpad as far as the functionality of it. Is this something that would be able to stream files off your server?
I think you can stream your stuff. You can get some SMB shares and stuff, probably remote desktop into there through a browser and that kind of stuff. Yeah.
The article I'm reading here says that the Amazon tablet would be hundreds less than an iPad and have more muscle with a quad-core processor, but no mention anywhere that I can see of the operating system.
Yeah, I had heard the price of $250 going around for that Amazon tablet when it finally does. I don't know how accurate that is, but
yeah, I think the key there is not just price, but also capabilities. You know, you can't sure. If you sell a $250 product and it looks like it's, you know, cheap compared to the iPad. Yeah, maybe you might sell a whole bunch of them. You know, if Amazon makes a decent pad and sells it for $250, they may sell a whole bunch of them.
If you had a choice between whatever pad, what size is the screen? Do you know?
It says 10-inch.
Okay, so let's say you physically have the same hard drive, same form factor, same hardware. If you said, okay, we're for $250, you have a choice of this hardware with what's the Android software or the same hardware with the WebOS. Which one would you pick?
Android.
Yeah.
And the reason I would is, I guess that I'd have to look at it a different way. It, with the WebOS continuing and them supporting it.
Yeah, if they bought it, they say we bought the license, we're taking over.
I don't know. I just haven't been exposed enough to the WebOS to make that decision. So, you know, right now I'd say Android.
Okay.
But I don't have a good enough information on the other side.
How many apps they got in their app store, those guys?
Android?
Yeah.
I think it's, 100,000 or so? They got tons. Okay. I got 10 screens full of them on my phone.
Imagine if it would be a like a dual boot or something, if you could switch between Android OS and WebOS?
Yeah.
That might be
I'm going to hold out for Windows 8 for a tablet. I currently don't have a laptop right now, but I think I'm going to hold out for Windows 8 and see what that brings us.
Yeah, it reminds me of, I think Ian Dixon, I saw a couple of his tweets there. He was talking about whether or not, because he got some links to a guy, Steve Sanofsky, I think it is. The guy was talking about whether or not Windows Media Center would be in Windows 8. And the guy, like he said, yes, it will.
John, you're cracking up.
Oh. John froze a little.
Yeah, go ahead and repeat what you were saying there over the last 30 seconds.
They decompartmentalize. Is that the word, decompartmentalize? Yeah. Like they have, that's each group is working on different thing. It says so, like the media center part is not ready. So, but they will have in the final, or they'll have like one of those SKUs, right? Where it's like, okay, Windows Home, Windows Media Center Edition. But I wonder how that's going to run.
Tim, with Microsoft, you know, I think that they're probably a year and a half, 2 years away from coming out with a tablet with Windows 8. By that time, you've got Amazon, you know, hit the ground running. You've got the iPod, you know, iPad definitely entrenched. And I think it's sort of like in the world of cameras, where once you buy the camera, you buy the accessories that go along with it, and you're pretty much locked into the brand. And to get you to shift off the brand, you got to come up with something that is enticing for me to move, both in features and in price.
It's going to be way better, yeah.
Yeah, Microsoft is going to be coming in three generations behind, at least. The best scenario Microsoft can hope for is that they're only three generations behind. And at that point, people are entrenched in what they're doing, and they're going to be facing an even tougher market. It's sort of like what's happening with the phone. They're moving too slow. They came in too late, and they're getting people who are entrenched in other ways, and they're going to have – they can't use their normal marketing, which is zero, in order to move people. They're going to have to do something stronger.
Yeah, in my case, I mean, I'm a Windows household, so that's why, you know, I also own a Windows phone. So, there's been a lot of debate about Windows phone and how slow they're moving with it, but, I mean, I love my phone.
Well, you know, I am a Windows home too, except for, you know, my Android thing. And I am anti-Apple, not because they don't make good products. I just don't want to buy their stuff.
Yeah, I pretty much am too.
Yeah. But Microsoft, in the world that they're in right now, they either are going to move faster or they're going to lose.
Well, they're going to, you know, that may be true. But, you know, here with Windows 8, they're going to be coming into the marketplace with at least an updated OS. And... Yeah. At this point, the hardware pieces have caught up. You know, in the past, a lot of people said, well, Windows had tablets before. They never went anywhere. You know, they were real sluggish and sort of quirky. But, you know, I think this is that time where the hardware actually caught up to the OS. And I don't know. I think you're going to see, hopefully, this has always been my hope. I've had this shut down many times from Microsoft where things start to converge and the components of Windows are more interactive. I'm hoping for big things with this. I hope I'm right.
Yeah, well, Paul Thorati was saying on one of the shows there, Windows Weekly, that Microsoft, that's it. He said it scales nicely, the new Windows 8, like, you know, whether you use it on a PC or whether you're going to use it on a tablet, which is, you know, it's like, wow, did Microsoft, you know, get this right? Because that's one of the things is with Apple, you know, they have their different products, and you have an Apple phone or Apple TV, this and that. Everything connects, everything works. It's like beautiful. You just bought a new device, you turn it on, it sees the other device, everything is working great. And with Windows, it's like their phone, you know, their thing, the PC. You know, some departments don't know what other departments are doing, and they, you know, like he's even said that with Microsoft, with all their software, like they can't connect the dots. So it's like, you know, is this going to happen with Windows 8? If they're going to be able to you know, scale very easily from their PC to their tablet device, you know how's that going to, you know, is that going to be enough to like you say, Mike, to pull in the new people? You say, oh, look, you know, I have a Windows PC, and if I get this tablet or this Windows Phone 7 or whatever, you know, am I going to be able to, you know, have everything mesh very nicely?
I wonder if part of Microsoft's problem also is part of their advantage, but part of their problem is, you know, with Apple, they control the entire distribution. They make the software, they make the hardware. Microsoft makes the software, but relies pretty much on other people to make the hardware. You know, HP to make the PCs, and probably whoever they're going to farm out the pads, the tablets to also. And with that, you know, you're reliant on someone on that other party to produce a quality product. And I wonder if that is part of the reason why their stuff doesn't interact as well, like you said, where you've got Apple and all their stuff just talk to each other so well. Well, they're making everything from the software to the hardware, where Microsoft's not doing that.
Yeah.
I think that's always been their problem.
Yeah, you know, that's one of the things I tell people is, you know, people say how much better the Mac is over the PC, and I say, it's not, you know, I don't think that's true, for one. And two, if you had a bad experience on the PC, it was probably because you bought, you know, something from HP or Compact or Dell or something like that, and you got all their crap that they're going to load on there. So the first thing you should do when you buy one of their pieces of crap is format the hard drive and install the OS fresh. Of course, make sure you have...
Windows 7 was a bit of a game changer. It's a bit of a... They clean a lot of stuff up, if you put a fresh, clean install of Windows 7, you're right.
Yeah, but he's talking about crapware specifically.
Yeah, but that's,
you know, music all that match, junk, blah, and, yeah, blah, blah, all that.
Now, before you go, before people go run out and format in a hard drive, make sure you have all the software somewhere so you can reinstall stuff.
You might want to do that, yeah.
But, you know, my dad buys Dells, and I tell him, you know, format that hard drive and just install the OS fresh, because you got all that crap on there. And, you know, because you hear people talk about blue screen to death. I've got... each one of us in the house have a PC, a Windows machine. Two teenagers, almost a teenager, my wife and myself. And I can't recall the last time any of us had a blue screen, even on XP. We didn't do Vista. We went from XP to 7. And I don't recall a blue screen in the last 10 years. Not once.
Yeah. Yeah, I had a blue screen on my server the other day, and it turned out that it was RAM. It had nothing to do with the OS or any application. It was RAM.
I had a blue screen because I was using that add-in. I was using Windows Small Business Server Essentials 2011, and I installed the StableBit add-in, and I also had that update that they had with the folder redirection there, the Windows 7 Professional, blah, blah, blah. And then I was copying a lot of files, so it was like chugging away, copying, and then bang, blue screen, and then it gave me the, it said Cove Cube W Windows Home Server, something like that. So it had something to, like, there, that add-in, you know, killed it.
Yeah.
So, you know, but that's it. It wasn't like a Windows thing. If I wasn't running that add-in or whatever, then I wouldn't have had that. Well, again, it's still, you know, early version of version 1. Who knows if they'll come out with Service Pack 1 or... Windows Home Server 2011. But it came out with that added, that update, right? Update roll-up.
Yeah.
But that's a couple little crap
Now, you said who knows that they'll come out with Service Pack 1. So is that because you think that the OS is pretty well, you know, stable now and doesn't require a Service Pack 1, or because prior to them coming up with Service Pack 1, they'll kill it?
No. I think the it's like, you know, maybe there's things that they didn't figure out yet, and, you know, they like, you know, being out in the public and people having, you know, testing it enough that there might be, oh, okay, you know, we can tweak this, we can tweak that. Like the other thing that came around about in Windows Home Server 2011, the audio stuff there, where it automatically went online and it grabbed, changed the metadata. You know, right. They figured they would put that in, you know, as because it's a headless system, and it's like, let's just make it all automatic. But then guys like Tim there, I imagine you get all your metadata, recompiled or whatever. And it's like, what are these guys doing? So I could see them coming up with that. But I know there was an update. There was a Service Pack 1. Now that I think about that, there was a Service Pack 1 that came out for Windows Home Server, Windows 7. Yeah, because Windows 7 and Windows Server have the same core stuff. So they said the same service pack updated both. So I guess technically you could say that they did come out with a service pack. Yeah. Jim, you're back.
Hope you guys didn't miss me. Sound like you had an interesting conversation that I missed, maybe?
Yeah, we touched on the WebOS a bit. And Microsoft.
Some more WebOS. You know, I actually went a whole week without writing a single post about the WebOS.
Man, you put a lot of time.
I got a little... I did, and actually, I just got a note today. The post that I did on Byte was top 20 for 2 weeks now.
Nice.
So that has been good. But I got a little frustrated with HP. I sent an open letter to HP on behalf of eBay, and I said, dear HP, thanks for really screwing up the touchpad implementation. Thank you very much, eBay. And I should have said eBay and Craigslist, because if you go out on either one of those, you can see people trying to fire sale their, or take advantage of people by selling these for twice the price they bought them for. So I've seen some $200 touchpads out there on Craigslist and eBay that I know were purchased for $99, and folks trying to cap it. And there's nothing wrong. This is America. Nothing wrong with that. I'm all for it, but HP could not have done a worse job. And I just then they announced we're going to make a second run, and oh, by the way, we're probably not going to sell them for $99. And I'm just like, are you that stupid that you and I'm going to channel Christian here for just a second. are you that stupid that you can't see why they bought for $99? You know, it's not because they were great. It was because they were $99. And if you take that away, people aren't going to buy them, and you're going to get stuck with another $500,000. Then you'll have some ridiculous fire sale again, and everybody will get crazy about it. So
I don't know why they're even doing it, to tell you the truth. I mean, somebody suggested maybe they have spare parts.
Yeah, I think that's Rich. I think that is the case. Is that there were parts in inventory that would have been, some of them would have had to have been scuttled and just gotten rid of. Other parts like processors and antennas and radios, I'm sure could be reused in other in other pieces of equipment. But I'm sure there was a stockpile somewhere of equipment they just thought, well, they're popular, let's put them together and let's sell them for $249. And could you be any dumber, HP?
Yeah, I had heard they were going to do another run of them, but I did not hear that they were going to charge a higher price from that. This makes no sense whatsoever.
Well, the pricing. So here's what I've read, right, in my entertainment news to come full circle. Here's what I've read is that they're considering not selling them at the $99 and $149 price point. That they've been very cryptic about it. They have not been very clear about it. They're not even clear on how many they're going to make. They're not sure what channels are going to be released through. There hasn't been a clear plan for this. They don't know if they're going to send them back through the big box stores or if they're just going to sell them on HP.com. Now, I haven't read anything in 3 or 4 days. So by the time folks are listening to this, maybe it's all been ironed out and maybe I missed it. But it's just one of those examples of, from a corporate perspective, how out of touch I think the corporate executives were with what's actually going on in the business and the market, and making some really, really poor decisions because they could have sold these things. They could have done a fire sale and sold them at $99 and not de-supported them and sold them out fast and had a user base like that. I mean, just a 500,000 users, just like that. Mm-hmm. And so I've said it. I've said that. Probably
yeah, that would have been an interesting. That would have been an interesting marketing ploy.
Yeah. How cool would that have been?
And, it would have been very cool.
It would have been cool. I did go out the other night and I looked at Android tablets, and I looked
the
at
Galaxy. The Galaxy. I want the Galaxy Tab.
I did look at the Galaxy Tab. I looked at the smaller version and the 10.1. I love the 7, the paperback size one. I like that size.
Jim, I'll ask you the question. What happens? I asked Mike before. If Amazon bought the webOS and sold, had two models for $250, like. That hardware there, that 10-inch and that 7-inch, they sold that with a choice. You had the same for $250. It's either you get it with the Android software or you get it with the webOS software. Which one
I'd
would you take?
WebOS.
Went with Android.
I'm having some trouble with my Android device right now, and it's.
Don't they have 250,000 apps?
Well, here's the problem, right? So when I was in Kansas City 2 weeks ago, the phone locked up on me completely, and I've been adding apps as I go and doing some stuff. So I came back on Monday. I reformatted the device, took it. I ROMed it back to the Stone Age, so to speak, and it worked great. And during the last 2 weeks, I've been adding apps and as you go. Hey, I need the Skype app. I need the Foursquare app. Oh, I better load this app and that app. And I've been watching it slowly degrade into a piece of crap.
I think we need more processor.
Yes, I think we do. But so that's not fair. You're right, Mike. You know what? You bring up an interesting point. This is not a fair comparison. I'm comparing Android on a phone to a webOS tablet those are apples and oranges, right?
So let me ask you a question. Speaking of apples, and maybe one of you guys can help me. Multitasking on an Android versus an iPhone, do they both do true multitasking, or what is the multitasking features of the both? Because I think in my Android, it still is running that thing in the background, still chewing up my battery, still chewing up, processor time and all that. So I think it's doing true multitasking. Maybe I could be wrong. Does the iPhone do that too?
I don't think it does true multitasking.
Or does anybody know if I'm right about the Android phone? Because I do. The one bad thing about this thing is it gets horrible battery life.
I don't know.
I don't know either, Mike. I'll be honest with you. I haven't dug. I'm sure there's some mobile phone podcasts or sites that would dig.
But that could be part of our problem, though, Jim. That could be part of the problem with the Android, is that if it is doing true multitasking, we keep loading these apps, and some of those apps keep getting loaded, is that could be degrading the phone's performance. I have something called Advanced Task Killer. I don't know if you've run that. And I have it set to the most aggressive setting as it can get to kill stuff all the time. Because there's things that keep popping up that I don't tell it to pop up, but they keep popping up.
I use Juice Defender, same kind of idea.
Yeah, and it kills those things.
But, Mike, here's my – I think, Android is the Windows of 1995 through 2000, and that it's so open and it's so my wife just came home and – I'm my college student. I was waiting for that to happen. And so the Android devices, there's nobody watching the store at Google on Android for the most part. It's just whatever you want to do, however you want to do it. Handset makers are changing things. There's no control over the software development. And while I don't agree necessarily with Apple's methodology on it, Windows 7 works better because there's some better controls around the applications and what Microsoft is doing, and that product has matured. I'm not sure Google is mature enough as an OS at this point or has enough controls to be a good, solid operating system at this point. I still think it's kind of wild, wild west, Yahoo kind of thing. It's Windows 95.
Yeah,
just my opinion.
I still like it. So. Now, I put this in the home server forums, but the phone I want next is that Samsung Galaxy Note. Have y'all seen that?
The bigger phone.
The 5.3-inch dual core 1.4 gigahertz processor.
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw that.
Why is that? Because you have big hands, or you like the form factor?
I like the form factor. I want, you know, something a little bigger.
By the way, so you know that you heard it here first. Gary Johnson, right, Christian's dad, has named those phablets. PH, right, PH for phone.
Yep.
And then the rest is for the tablet. So phablets is what he's calling those. It's a hybrid between a phone and a tablet.
We got to make that stick.
Phablets.
Yeah, phablets.
It's great. I think it's
You're going to have to wear, like, khaki pockets to put your phone in your pockets, right?
Big cargo pants,
yeah,
right?
Big cargo pants with the big, humongous pockets.
I did like the look of that phone, though. It is a nice-looking phone. HTC just announced the Titan, too, which is going to be a Mango phone. That looks pretty good. It's not quite as big as that one you're looking at, Mike. I think it's how big is the screen size on that one, that Samsung?
It's 5.3 inches.
Yeah, I think the
But does
Titan
it look a little
like
big
4.6.
on your ear?
Yeah, you look a little. You look like an idiot talking on it.
Not for a phone. It would be good like an iPod Touch where you just use it as for your notes and all of this stuff. But
who uses these to talk on anyway?
Yeah.
No, you're right about
that. These things don't make good phones.
No, they don't. I'm finding, you know what? I had the touchpad here, and Rich called me one day, and the touchpad was ringing, and I'm like,
well, I'm not holding that.
Okay. And so, so I hit, and it went right to full screen Skype, and Rich and I were talking. That, to me, I still think that's the future of the way we make phone calls. We stop doing this and we start doing this.
We'll have to start doing this, you know.
You know what? when we travel,
enterprise.
Our home VoIP is through T-Mobile. It's a little router that they put a SIM card into, and then we route all the our home phones. You know, one home phone plugs into it, and all the rest of them are wireless. And so I can take that SIM card out. I put it into a little feature flip phone. Put it in there, and then when we travel. Anybody calls the house, that little cell phone, that little feature phone rings. So, you know, I can be in Louisiana visiting my parents and somebody calls my house and that flip phone answers. And what I find is when I'm traveling, I would rather talk on that thing than talk on my Android phone. It's easier to dial. It's quicker to dial. It's quicker to answer. You know, flip that thing up, it answers. The voice quality is just as good. So
you'll be like Batman, a utility belt. You'll have just the phone and then you're Note, you're a Galaxy Note. Take notes, then listen on the phone.
Wow.
Cool.
All right.
Well, we lost Jim.
Yeah, Jim's out.
We kind of needed Jim to close out the show.
Wrap it up.
All right. Well, let's bow our heads.
Wrap it up.
Well, he's still recording.
He is still recording. Well, all right. Look, why don't we go ahead and wrap it up then? You know, it's been about an hour and a half.
Yeah, I mean, you can cut off the recording anytime you want.
Because if we keep going, I'm going to start talking about Kevin Mitnick's Ghosts in the Wires book, which I've been reading.
Yeah, let's wrap it up.
Yeah.
That's a good close.
That's a good point to close, right?
It is good. Guys, thanks for – and I'll just say this for the audio part of the podcast. We – Rich and I do this on the weekends, and we still haven't found a really great time. I think, Rich, Saturday nights might work better than Sundays, what we've been doing. So, Mike, you got a comment there?
Yeah, you know, dinner time is not always best for me.
So is this dinner time for you?
So my wife says, why are they playing that at dinner time all the time? And I said, well, you know, the problem is there's just no one time that's going to be great.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, so six o'clock.
Six is dinner for you guys?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, yeah, it's tough. We've tried to think through the scenarios, and afternoons or during the year of football, you know, there's a 2:30 game, right? There's an 11:30 slot, a 2:30 slot, and then a 7 o'clock primetime slot. And so I tried to sneak it in at 5 Central to get it towards the back half of the 2:30 game. Anyways, Rich and I will continue to iron this out. If you follow me on Google+, I will usually, or on Twitter, just at Jay Collison, I will often tweet out as well as let the tech guys know. And we do this podcast on an open format. So I'd like to meet you before we bring you on the show, but we're trying to be kind of open about this and get as many folks into it as we can. So guys, Tim and Mike, John, appreciate you guys coming in tonight and doing thing that we do.
Thank you guys.
Hope you enjoy it. And of course you can always find this recording. If you're listening to it and you haven't been out, check out theaverageguy.tv. we've got some other podcasts over there as well. Rich, anything you want to close up with?
No, that's about it. You better shut me off before I do start talking about Mitnick. I'm also reading I Was, too.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and that's been around since 2006. And I got to leave you with this. The one thing that I get, one of the things I got a kick out of is how Steve Jobs screwed Steve Wozniak over on the first job they did together with Atari. And the breakout, the game Breakout Steve Jobs says to Woz, you know, hey, we got to create this in 4 days. So then he tells Woz, hey, yeah, you know, I'm going to split this. We'll split this, right? We'll split whatever proceeds we get from Atari. So he shows up with a $350 check for Woz. And years later, Wozniak finds out Jobs took $5,000 from Atari on that. So he screwed him out of like a couple thousand dollars.
Nice.
Yeah, that's all. I'll leave you with that happy apple.
That's ended on a positive note. Guys, thanks again. Yes. We'll do this podcast again next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye, guys.
Bye, guys. Thanks.